had to consult the joint tagging mechanism
on the classification of the bill. Our office has assisted the committee in respect of advising the joint tagging committee. We recommend that the bill is a Section 76 bill for the reason that it affects consumers. So for that, the process, in other words, in the National Council of Provinces, will be a 76 process. We also advise the joint tagging mechanism that we are of the view that the bill does not have to be referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders because it does not pertain to customs or indigenous law. Then where do we go from here? At this point in time, the National Assembly rules allow this committee to make further amendments to the draft bill. So all of the things that we've heard, all of the things that has been, the inputs that have been made, all of that can be taken into account by this committee. We can change the whole bill if we want to. The only thing that we need to keep in mind is if we go broader than the bill at present or broader than the submissions received, we then will be required to publish again. So if we remain within the submissions received, and like I said, it was an avalanche of very useful information, I do not think that it will be necessary to go outside of that fund of information. Then I think we will be fine in simply proceeding, amending the bill and then proceeding. I also just want to draw your attention to something very quickly. The third row in that table talks about certification. That has come up, and I'll speak to constitutionality now. So this committee will be assured that by the time this bill goes out from this committee, that there will be a view from the Constitutional Legal Services Office regarding the constitutionality of this bill. So, and in that regard, we have also requested the committee that this committee itself consult the senior counsel for itself. At this point in time, I have requested, there was a bit of a delay in obtaining certain documents from counsel, and I have requested Mrs. Phubbs, if the committee could perhaps delay, because I think there is going to be a number of amendments to this bill, and that we then send a final bill, because we have now received other opinions. To get a third opinion that just says the exact same thing, at this point in time, I think it's a waste of money. We can rather then... So in other words, it is almost a silver lining that there was this delay from council side with the necessary documents. So that will still happen. When this bill goes out, it will be constitutional. I'm not a constitutional court, can't make that pronunciation, but to the best of my ability, I will assure you that the bill will be constitutional. Then I just want to take us back to the bill itself, so that we can just remember what we are dealing with here. It provides for a debt relief measure. We set down certain criteria regarding who may be qualified. Natural persons, we looked at income, we looked at assets, we looked at the maximum debt. Then we put out a process. Our process focused on only the NCR and the NCT being involved in this process. No debt counsellors. That was not the idea. The idea was to flow through the regulator and the tribunal. Now, The relief that in the end would have been looked at, what the committee envisaged was that first off, the regulator must look at whether this person could pay. That a number of members have made that point, that you cannot simply extinguish. If someone can pay, they must pay. So the idea was, first off, for the regulator to look at, can this person qualify for debt review? And then send them there. If it wouldn't work, look at reduced installments, look at capping the interest, etc. If all of these things didn't work, then only did we go to suspension and to the extinguishing of the debt. So you have now heard all of these constitutional opinions on constitutionality. And I think what we have done in the bill is simply we have not expressed ourselves maybe that clearly, because the measures are there. We are doing what they are saying. When we're talking about the process, we might not have explicitly said that the credit provider must be consulted, but the National Credit Regulator cannot make an evaluation without getting information from the credit provider. But I will get to that more specifically. I just wanted to highlight that now. Then the other main features was about reckless lending, mandatory credit life insurance, and certain offences that were created. The other amendments, mostly consequential in nature. So let us look at constitutionality. From the DTI, the opinion we had was there was a concern about limiting this measure to citizens. And they were concerned, why is this not to all natural persons? And the Act actually provides for. And I must be honest, I scratched my own head, and I couldn't remember why we limited this to citizens. So I went back in the drafts. And what happened is that we were first going to look at indigent people. And we were looking and trying to find a definition for indigent people. The closest we could find was from municipalities. And it's in the definition of municipalities that the phrase citizen came up. And we simply transplanted from there into our own definition. So I could not pick up that it was a requirement of this committee that the person must be a citizen. So I would recommend that this intervention be made available to everyone, every natural person rather, because the decision was made that this should not be available to a business, to all natural persons to whom the Act applies. So I think that was simply an oversight in that when we gelled the two documents or concepts together, we missed that alignment. So I would definitely propose that. Then there were some people who were still on the expropriation idea, and there must be compensation and so on, but the latest legal opinions agree, and I also am of that view, that this is not expropriation. There is no benefit to the state in this. There's no acquiring of assets by the state. It is definitely a deprivation of property. Now, as you've also heard, deprivation will only be unconstitutional if it is arbitrary. And how do we determine that? Whether there's a rationale and whether there is a procedural fairness. Okay, let's go to the next one. So if we look at rationale, there's a number of things that we can consider. You must look at what you've done, what are you going to achieve by this? What is the purpose of the deprivation? What is the nature of the property? What is the extent of the deprivation? Now, something that I want to point out here about the purpose of this deprivation. From the outset, this committee was clear that there is a gap for certain consumers. They fall through the cracks when it comes to sequestration because they don't have assets. They fall through the cracks when it comes to debt review because debt counselors do not see them as being profitable, if we can put it like that. That is why this bill was there. So one of the submitters, Summit, actually proposed that the current exclusion of consumers in this way may in fact be unconstitutional. So yes, everyone has been shouting that this bill might be unconstitutional, but very few people have shouted that this bill might be addressing unconstitutional circumstances. The opinion that Summit was referring to was an article written by Hermie Kutsia, and it was published in the International Insolvency Review of 2016. I do have that article, and I can make it available to members if you want to read it a little bit further. But I want to highlight a few things that is said in this article. First off, Ms. Kutsia says, South African natural person insolvency system remains creditor-oriented. We know that. That is exactly what this committee has been saying. This is despite the worldwide trend to accommodate all debtors. We're behind, is what this article is saying. The cumulative effects of all the available measures results in differentiation on financial grounds because the debtor must have some form of disposable asset or income in order to qualify either for debt review, sequestration, or administration. When in this article, the author then tests this South African natural person insolvency against the right to equality. And the findings are that, in fact, this amounts to unfair discrimination, that it entrenches the duality of the South African economy by keeping the indigent in a state of poverty. Even if you look at alternative measures, if it results in an excessive or an indefinite repayment period, like you have with your debt review, the system still unjustifiably discriminates against these debtors if you compare them with the discharge that someone gets when they have assets. So if they can be sequestrated, they have a break. They have, well, 10 years in which to recover, when they are automatically rehabilitated, or if they can do it in a shorter period, they can ask for rehabilitation. So this is discrimination based on socioeconomic status. So, you know, this is something that we must keep in mind, because it does affect, you know, it's a counter to this argument that there's no rationale. You know, we are not clear about the rationale. Well, maybe this is something that we need to be a bit more clear about. Maybe this is something that we need to include in our preamble to indicate that there is a fear of this being an unconstitutional or rather an unfair discrimination against people socioeconomically, and because they don't have assets to pay. So if we think about that purpose, I think we might start seeing this debate in a bit of a different light. Some of the other concerns that were raised in respect of rationale. First off, there was no requirement for the consumer to be over-indebted. Now, the intention of this committee was always to address over-indebted problems, not that anyone would qualify. The problem that came in is that when we looked at the 7,500 category, we didn't at that stage have the statistics to show who of those are over-indebted. While the members deliberated, there was a sense that, but surely all of these people must be over-indebted. And that is why the bill was worded as it is. Now the committee has the statistics, and it is clear that not everyone earning below 7,500 rand is in fact over-indebted. Some of them are actually not in arrears. So I would recommend that you make it very clear in the bill that this measure is only available to someone who is over-indebted. The other concerns that were raised on the rationale of the bill is that the role of the consumer, the fact that the consumer himself or herself might have been the reckless one, the fact that the credit provider may have 100% been responsible in lending, those roles aren't taken into account. I'm making a proposal, and these things will then be taken into account in that proposal. Furthermore, that there are possible significant adverse consequences for credit providers, but minimal adverse consequences for the consumer. So you're talking about that the balance, proportionality. The fact that there are existing means that we are not using, but like I've pointed out, we did. The intention was to first exhaust and first get the person to pay before we go on to the others. But clearly, that did not come out as clearly. I think that is something that we need to address. And then the impact of the bill. And I want to specifically talk to least restrictive means and the impact of the bill. In respect of least restrictive means, some of the concerns were that a number of measures have in fact recently been put into place. We know that there has been a lot of financial bills through the financial sector, regulating the financial sector. There have been amendments to the National Credit Act itself, regulations. And the concern was that these are untested, and now we're already bringing a new measure into play. Another comment was, if costs to consumers is the problem, rather review and subsidize those costs. That is maybe the way to rather go. Then again, and you've heard this case a number of times, NCR versus Opperman, was saying that if your deprivation, especially where it is far-reaching, your purpose should be clearly, and the means that you choose to accomplish it must be narrowly framed. So we need to be clear. I do think that we narrowly framed it, but I think that the way that the bill is drafted might have caused confusion. So that is what I'm saying there. I think that we have it in our bill, but I think we need to change how it is worded so that it is quite clear that we are first considering existing measures. The bigger concern for me is whether there is capacity with the regulator and with the tribunal. And I think that is definitely something the committee must consider. The impact of the bill, now my recommendation would be we need to, as far as possible, limit negative impact. We are affecting a constitutional right. We need to look at the least restrictive measure, and that also implies that the impact of the bill must be as little as possible. The concerns there was that there are current financial reforms. They look at the root cause level, And it was I think some of the submissions actually indicated that what we might be doing is to put a bandage on and not actually solve the real problem. A balance is needed. You need to look at the impact on the credit providers. They have compliance requirements. So the remedies that we are proposing, the measures, the orders that the tribunal can make, will impact on their compliance requirements. So there will be changes that they have to make. Could affect stability in the financial sector, and conversely, on the consumer itself. There's concerns that this group of consumers might be excluded. There's concerns that cost of credit might be upped for everyone in order to cover for this possible problem. Economic and moral hazards. Now, the moral hazard is about the fact that someone who enters into an agreement must try and comply with that agreement. So if I undertake to pay you 100 rand a month, and in return you are going to give me this loan, which I don't have currently, so that I can buy a car or something, I'm going to repay you, then I must, because you've given me the 100 rand, I must know that it is my duty to repay that 100 rand. Now the moral hazard comes in that where I know that this might be extinguished, that I will simply say, oh well, I'm not going to pay. Why should I pay? It's going to be extinguished. And that is the moral hazard that we must also consider. In fact, I've heard from some of the committee support staff that there's already inquiries about where can people apply. So it is something that the committee must take seriously. And if necessary, and that is where my proposal also comes in, we need to separate the principle of first do your extinguishing, we make it possible for, first do your debt review, we make it possible for you to go through debt review, and then we separate that extinguishing so that it is not the, it shouldn't be the cherry. It should be, you know, the last measure in order to help a consumer. It shouldn't be the first thing that you are running towards. So definitely we need to look at that. Systems that are required, and I think this for me is one of the other big problems. Every single person indicated that there is every single stakeholder group, credit providers have indicated they will need to adjust their systems. Credit Bureau have indicated that they would have to adjust their systems. Debt counselors have indicated that their systems will have to be changed. The National Credit Regulator will need new systems. The tribunal has indicated they have something, they have started with an electronic system, so that could just be adapted. But I think we all know that systems aren't created overnight. So we are looking at a period for this bill to be implementable. And that also affects our cut-off date, for instance, because 24 November 2017 suddenly becomes even further in the past. If we take the process that the bill still has to go through Parliament, then the system still has to be developed. In the end, the date doesn't even make sense anymore. I will also address that when I speak to the proposal. Statistics received indicate that the group that the bill targets could be around 9.2 million consumers. If we reduce that, if we say you have to be 9 months or so in arrears, then we are looking at 1.5 million consumers. A little bit more manageable, but still a huge number. And that comes again to the implementation challenges, and I'll speak to that separately. Then I want to speak to retrospectivity. I know that both of the opinions received were concerned about retrospectivity. But I also want us to keep in mind where I must be making notes because I've got so many thoughts going through my mind on this thing. Retrospectivity is only a relative no-no in criminal law. What we are doing here is civil law. And in fact, in the case of Pienaar Brothers with his revenue services, the court found an act that had strong retrospectivity constitutional. Now, strong retrospectivity is when your act actually has an operational date before its promulgation. So in other words, the act is promulgated on 5 June, but it comes into operation 1 January. That's strong retrospectivity. And the court found it constitutional. So it is not that it will always be unconstitutional. In fact, in that case, the court said that In my view, a proper approach would be to judge the legality of retrospective amendments on a case-by-case basis, having regard to the various considerations that the judge has referred to. Those considerations are the following. Laws must be clear. And you suspect, or rather you assume, that they are prospective. In other words, they only operate from the time of promulgation forward, unless the Act specifically tells you that it is operational retrospectively. So we will have to just make it very clear. Then the constitutional validity should be judged by applying the rationality test, what the reason is. And again, that is something that we have to consider with this bill in any event. And also, if I can just point out, remember the article relating to the possible unconstitutionality of this gap, of these consumers not having a means to address their over-indebtedness. So I can't think of a more rational reason for a bill than that. So this bill has weak retrospectivity. In other words, it will apply going forward. You can't have an application backwards. You can only apply afterwards. But it does affect credit agreements entered into before the promulgation. So it changes the outcome of something that was done. So that is weak retrospectivity. Now, yes, retrospective deprivation is more severe. So we will have to be very clear on what we're doing in this bill. But the National Credit Act, the act that we're amending, came into operation retrospectively. So it's exactly the same principle. Section 86 became operational on 1 June 2007. Schedule 3 of the Act and Item 4 says this Act applies to a credit agreement that was made before the effective date, that is 1 June 2007. If that credit agreement would have fallen within the application of this Act, then specifically it speaks to Chapter 4, Part D, applies to pre-existing agreements only to the extent that it does not concern rector's credit. So what does it apply to? Section 86 falls in Chapter 4 of Part D. That is the right of a consumer to apply for debt review. So if I can, all that legalese, if I can try and put it simply, debt review, when it came into operation on 1 June 2007, could be done in respect of a credit agreement that was entered into before June 2007. And that is what we are saying here. Nothing different. It's exactly what we are saying here. So the requirement for this committee is that our bill must be rational, reasonable, proportionate. And if we have that, we can apply it retrospectively. And I might sound a bit passionate about that, but the reason for that is the reason for this bill is that there are people now that are over-indebted. If we only provide for people who enter agreements now going forward, it means that they will only be able to be helped if they fall. So we're almost saying to them, we think that you are going to not be able to pay this, and that is why we are helping you in the future. No, we want to help people now, because there is in fact a view that the fact that they cannot access debt review or administration or sequestration might in fact be unconstitutional. And so that is why I'm saying I am not scared of that retrospectivity. And in any event, we can do, you know, lawyers, we always have a back door. The way I would suggest we do this is that we copy Schedule 3 in our bill. And this is what we put in. And if it is challenged, because we must also remember that any person out there has the right to challenge legislation in the Constitutional Court. It is not something that we can take away from anyone. And if the Constitutional Court, and this is a second if in this argument, if the Constitutional Court then says, no, but this retrospectivity in this case is unconstitutional, then the court can just take that section out, and then unfortunately it will only apply from the date of the Act being operational. I think that is a good compromise. I do not think that it will be found unconstitutional. I think there is an absolute rationale for it. It is reasonable and there is precedent. We are in fact following international example by providing this kind of provision. Oh, just as the one thing, the proposal of the department to take the date back to 2007, I also did not understand that, and I would not suggest that we go for the 2007. I would suggest that we do the item 4. Then the fair process. Now, when the committee discussed fair process, it was clear that the credit provider will play a role. We had it specifically spelled out in the bill, in the first couple of drafts of the bill. The concern was that the credit providers may bring their lawyers and they totally unsettle the balance, they might delay things. We wanted a speedy process. So we took that specific reference to them out of the bill, understanding that the tribunal has rules that will provide for that participation, understanding that the regulator can't look at this without consulting them. But it seems now that, seeing the comments that we receive, that the perception is that we are trying to cut the credit provider out. And that perception is something that as legislature we need to fix. So I would recommend that we make it very clear what the role of the credit provider is, when they come in, what they can do, etc. I think it is necessary. And also the proposal that I'm going to make, it will be much easier for that to actually happen. Even the rural NISI process that we brought in, that we thought could address this problem, there was a view, I think it was the DTI's opinion, that indicated no, because this only comes in at a stage after the extinguishing. And that is not acceptable. So we'll have to simply relook at that. The fact that the NCT needs a discretion when making an order, again, the first couple of drafts had that in. So the committee considered that. The concern for this committee crept in with the fact of arbitrariness. And we were worried that if we leave that discretion, that it might be found to be arbitrary. Now it seems it's the opposite. We should give that discretion back to the tribunal. And then, because we actually, then NCR versus Offerman indicates that will in fact be the opposite. So where we thought we are trying to stop it being arbitrary, in fact we were enabling it. So I definitely recommend that we give the tribunal back a discretion on the order that they can make. Implementation challenges. There are two concerns. The one is the role of the credit regulator as an administrator and as a regulator. The conflict that might come up, the skills required, the fact that your NCR will become a processing center and then will put your credit providers and your consumers with no recourse when there is a dispute. So that was a concern that had to be considered. The capacity of the regulator and the tribunal. How many offices do they have throughout the country? In fact, there's only one for the regulator. The tribunal can move around a bit, but they fly people down. Now, the example one person gave was that a debt counselling firm with 50 people can handle about 400 applicants and about 5,000 consumers in total. Yesterday's presentation, we looked at 1.7 million, and the DTI indicated about 300 debt counsellors. I think if we look at those stats, it's still not aligned. I think NCR is going to need a lot more people than the 300 if they handle it themselves. Now, the proposal that I want to make is that we retain what we have, but we word it differently. So, in other words, your relief measures 1, 2, and 3, and I want to quickly go back to slide 6, the existing measures, consider reckless lending, consider possible debt review, consider reduced installments, that be done through the debt review system. Now, it could be done in one of two ways. I'm back on slide 16. It could be done in one of two ways. We could either look at a fund. There was a subsidy before for consumers to access debt counsellors. That subsidy lapsed and it wasn't revived. So we can look at that being set in place again. Whether that is funded by a levy or whether that is funded from the normal budget line items and so on, or vote, part of the DTI's vote, that is something that we'll have to still discuss, and I would definitely recommend that there be consultation with the Minister of Finance on this. Treasury is here, so they can take it back and come and give us some feedback on that as well. The other option is that the regulator creates a division that acts as debt counsellors. My recommendation would be that perhaps both is something that we need to look at, so that you have the time with the regulator to set this up, and maybe over a period of time, this division within the regulator could replace the need for the fund. In other words, if they have enough people all over the country to actually assist consumers, then the fund can maybe be phased out. This, of course, also means that I'm proposing that this not be a once-off measure. I'm proposing that we put in place something that will then be applicable until the Act is amended again. And that is one of the amendments. So, in other words, instead of saying it applies only to debt from up to 24 November, we say it applies to any credit agreement that you've entered into before this Act comes into operation, and you can make this application at any time, because the application will be a debt review application. So we'll run it through debt review. Whether that is with the debt counsellor or the NCR is perhaps something that can still be talked about and considered. Then, you still have your limits. So in other words, the persons who qualify for the subsidy will still be the people who fall in that gap. We will have to allow the minister to prescribe, because it will increase maybe or decrease as time goes by and circumstances change. The same will go for the debt, the cap of the debt. Then, the consumer will know that he or she will have to go through a debt review process. So already you're taking that cherry out. This extinguishment is no longer the first thing that they see. They will have to go through debt review. They will have to see if they can pay, whether it's over a period of time, whatever. That we can also, in fact, prescribe, because remember, the view of Kutsia was that even if you have to solve over a very lengthy period of time, even that is unfair discrimination. So perhaps that can be limited to a five-year period. That is currently the practice, is to try and solve over a five-year period. Then if the consumer earns so little that they cannot even over 5 years pay back their debt, that is when we then kick in with the rest of the debt intervention measure. So what will then happen is that the debt counsellor or the NCR who has been assisting this consumer will then go to the tribunal and say, you need to suspend this person's debt or credit agreements for a period of 12 months. But we include that there must be a 6-monthly review. Because remember, now we have that support. We have either the debt counsellor or the regulator who is assisting this person. So they must review after 6 months, make a report to the tribunal to say whether it should be proceeding. I would also recommend that your suspension period is not just twice, but that it actually be lengthened to 5 years, so that this person really tries everything in their power to find a job. One of the comments was, if you suspend for 2 years, someone might say, I'm going to do some informal jobs on the side so that I can get my debt extinguished. But if you extend it to a 5-year period, it becomes more a medium-term goal, and it might be more conducive for people to actually look for a job. So we're also minimizing that moral hazard risk. And then right at the end of that 5 years, if this person still cannot solve, then we give a discretion to the tribunal to extinguish. But we say to the tribunal, there's a number of things that you can take into account. You can take the role of the consumer into account. Why is this consumer without a job? Has it been, the person was maybe a specialized fitter or something, that industry had big retrenchments, that whole industry is still down, there's no jobs available. Then the tribunal can say, but this person is in a situation without his or her own making, and then extinguishing can happen. You can also look at, there's a number of criteria, in other words, that we can bring in to make it more fair. Now, this proposal will address the fact of constitutionality. We'll be first using existing measures, the debt review. The impact of the bill will be lessened significantly. The role of the consumer will be taken into account, and there will definitely be more engagement. The impact of the measure will be lessened. It's more balanced. Moral hazard is minimized. The impact is lessened. Consumer's role is considered. There will be more consequences for the consumer to avoid abuse. And then a question came up, but how exactly? So we did ask Treasury if they could ask 8020 to adjust their slides a bit for us so that we can give this to the committee. And now I understand the slides, and of course 8020 can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure Treasury will take this back to them. So if you start with a starting point of 1,500 income, then you're sitting with 1.6 million consumers. Now, of those in consumers, 49 to 57% of them, according to the statistics, are actually not in arrears at all. So they won't even be part of this equation. A number of them are still making some payments, so they may still be able to solve. So that's about 31%. 21% are in arrears on all accounts for more than 3 months. That comes down to 735,000 consumers. Sorry, my brain is now slipping. I can't do numbers. I'm in word mode. So the amount that we're looking at, 7.6 billion, still a big amount. But remember, these people will first go through debt review. We'll see if they really can't pay, and then there will be a suspension. So in that period of time, there can be this financial literacy, the budget, all of that training can be given to them, try to help them to rehabilitate. So also, your debt counselor and your credit providers will have had discussions. So your credit provider will be on board. Credit provider will most likely understand that this person cannot repay because the person has been retrenched or whatever. So we might even be dealing with consent orders, which makes the process much faster. Most of these, or some of these consumers at least, will be people who have been retrenched, who want to work. So if you give them that 12-month gap, quite likely they will find a job, and extinguishing will not even come into the picture, because after the 12-month gap, they'll go maybe on debt review, or they'll actually be able to pay their debts. So that is the proposal that I'm making. I just want to make sure that I've spoken to all of them. Yes. So I would ask the committee to consider that proposal. It is not that big diverging from the current bill, but it will make a better cut between the first existing measures to be used and the extinguishing, so that process is more clear, making use of the existing infrastructure, and perhaps allow for other infrastructure to be developed. Also, this will allow for systems to be put in place, because we don't have to do it immediately. Okay, then clause by clause, I am running out of time a bit, I think. Am I still fine? Okay. I've made some recommendations in respect of drafting. I'm not going to go into that. It's changed this word to that. There is a document. Members can look at that. Retrieve lending and credit life insurance, I've dealt with separately on specific slides, and I will get to that. There were some proposals for definitions. I think it is something that could be considered. In respect of incidental credit agreements, the argument was, but you know, if you actually want to look at changing borrowing and spending habits, then that doesn't apply to an incidental credit agreement. Now, we brought incidental credit agreements in because we were concerned about minor-headed households. And because a minor can't enter into an agreement, quite likely they will be settled with these incidental agreements. But I will also be making some proposals about the inclusion of minors in that way, so that we perhaps rather make provision for them at the stage of where the tribunal is considering an application, and that there rather discretion be used in respect of minors, and that we then rather exclude incidental agreements. It does make sense. The arguments made to exclude it do make sense. Clause 3, a proposal to exclude trusts, stock sales, and sole proprietors. The intention from the committee was never to assist businesses. This was for a consumer, so not for businesses. So I would recommend that we, if someone is able to apply for debt review, that is who should qualify. There was a proposal to add a function to the regulator that they can refer any offence to the National Prosecuting Authority. This could be considered. There were questions raised on whether to register all these applications is in fact necessary. If my proposal is accepted by the committee, then the register in fact falls through. But it is something to consider. It looks like it isn't necessary. Credit Bureau Association also indicated that there are other ways to report, and perhaps we should have some discussions with them on how the best way would be for this kind of record keeping to happen. The courts referring matters to the regulator, there were concerns about the rights of consumers. There was a case of ShopRite, National Credit Regulator with ShopRite, where the court indicated that some consumers may actually prefer not to be referred for debt review. They do not want that reputational risk or whatever consequences, so they need to be given an option. So I agree. I recommend that we provide an option. Then there was another proposal that the court should be allowed to make the order. And thinking about it, it does make sense. Why, if the court has all the information before them, can't they make the order right there and then? So we could perhaps just allow the court to make any order that can be made in respect of debt review in that respect. It makes it quite easy. Retention of information on the credit bureau databases. Now, I know that this was something that was discussed. The proposal is that it should be a 5-year period. Now, if we look at sequestration is a 10-year period before you're automatically rehabilitated. If we talk about, if the proposal is accepted and we're looking at a 5-year suspension, then if that was extinguished, remember during the suspension period, the person can't qualify for other credit products. Then a period of 5 years, bring it up on par with sequestration. So there's a benchmark. It does make sense. So I'm recommending that the committee considers this and perhaps just discuss this and look at the benchmarking of sequestration versus this. Of course, rehabilitation must still be possible before that period of 10 years, and then that needs to affect that. there was also concern about what if the person defaulted on the tribunal's order, and I recommend that we also look at that, because surely that is someone who thought that they would qualify and they would come for this, and then they just don't. And it might even be if it is their fault for not complying, then that should perhaps be retained on the credit bureau records. Slide 22. This is now the big the concerns about the debt intervention measure itself. Mostly concerns were about process, accessibility of the regulator, verification, how will that happen, there should be time frames, how will the NCR determine interest rates, who will follow up after the suspension, will appeal be necessary. So all of these things are very important. I have talked about a lot of them under implementation problems and the role of the regulator, so I won't repeat that. Process, the role of the credit provider under constitutionality, we've addressed that. They are all valid concerns, but if the proposal is accepted and we go via debt review, then all of these concerns are addressed because there is an existing process and will simply slot in there. The inclusion of disabled person, a minor heading a household or a woman heading a household, caused utter confusion. Some people were asking, but why did you not include the elderly? Others asked, why did you include a minor? Others say, but are these groups now, do they have different criteria applying to them? And that was never the intention. The committee simply wanted to make clear that we understand that these people might be part of this vulnerable group. So there was a proposal that this group rather be referred or rather be moved to the tribunal's discretionary orders. In other words, when the tribunal gives an order, they must, one of the factors that they must take into account is whether the consumer is part of one of these groups, and in other words, part of the vulnerable groups. And I would recommend that is considered. Then there were also the issue of joint estates, household income, joint debt. One of the opinions, I think it was DGI's opinion, mentioned this in relation to constitutionality. I don't think it was ever the intention of this committee to cut that out. It is definitely something that must be made provision for. So I would recommend that is done. Others were realizable assets. There were so many questions about realizable assets. How will it be determined? How do you know what is a second-hand value? What is a swift conversion? And there was one person actually who said, consumers might sell assets because they might have, for instance, a gambling problem or a drug problem, yet they may still be able to pay their debts. So is it really conducive to look at assets? Should we not rather simply look at the ability of the consumer to service his or her debt obligations? And that is where the over-indebted criteria comes in again, and I do recommend that we look at over-indebtedness. And I think the assets are going to cause us more problems, or the NCR rather, more problems than what it will help. So I would recommend that we take that out. Requirement of over-indebtedness, I've just spoken to that. The once-off nature, the cut-off date, My proposal deals with those measures. I do think that we should rather go for a long-term process and that it should be retrospective but not a cut-off date. Others were proposals for certain processes, certain agreements to be included or not done. If we go by the way of debt review, it's not applicable. Otherwise, the committee will have to consider those proposals. Having third parties assist applicants, again, if we go by way of debt review, that is sorted. Something that did come up is whether we should perhaps look at credit providers assisting consumers. I don't know how the committee would feel about that. I think the regulator and the tribunal will have to give us some advice on that. The issue of a single tribunal member, I think the tribunal should maybe address the committee on this, but I'm of the view that a single tribunal member can definitely do an application. The legal effect of extinguishing a debt, I recommend that we clearly spell that out. We know what it means, but it seems that in law, and I'm a lawyer, I should know that, people try and find loopholes. So people might come and say, oh, but it's extinguished now, I have an enrichment claim against you because you still have the goods that I sold to you, and you still owe, you know, you no longer owe me money in terms of a contract, so you've been enriched. So we definitely need to make sure that that is in fact spelled out. Rehabilitation, there were comments that all the debt must be paid back before rehabilitation. I think this is a policy decision. The committee can discuss that. It was thoroughly discussed, but the committee can perhaps consider that. Budget of financial literacy. National Treasury actually indicated that there is current developments in this regard, and they were actually concerned that we might be duplicating something. So perhaps we need to find out more from Treasury what these are, so that this bill can slot in with that program. There was a request that the regulator should prescribe the list of accredited institutions and programs rather than the minister. I would advise against that. I don't see that it is such a burden to take that to the minister to prescribe. The regulator will still be the one who is actually looking at it in practice. I would recommend that we keep it to the minister. Section 88F. And you've heard from the opinions as well. Some people were saying that it's way too broad a delegation. It is starting to resemble Parliament's plenary powers, which we may not delegate. Some of the clauses were taken out and said, you know what, this could actually result in the minister suspending or extinguishing all the debts in one province. And I looked at it and I actually agree, that's not our intention. Definitely not our intention, but that is what it could result in. Then the fact that, remember the committee was very concerned that, in fact from the start, the committee was very concerned about giving this power to the minister. And we put in all these measures to stop an abuse of this power by the minister. And the committee then said, if the minister wants to go broader, let's come and ask permission. And even that is criticized by saying, but this takes so wide because this could mean anything. And all the only bridge that he has to cross is to get permission. So all of these things, it seems there's a big discomfort about whether this would in fact be constitutional, whether it's not too broad. Of course, there's also the practical side. The credit providers said, but this introduces a risk. We can't assess risk because anything might happen tomorrow. There might be a regulation coming out tomorrow that takes away the cash that we've just invested in consumers. Other people were saying, but there are better measures available. Some of the criteria was too vague. Now, in the opinions that we've received, both in National Treasury and DTI's opinion, it seems that the A and B of 88F2, and I think these relate to the urgent issues. I just quickly want to go there in my bill so that I can read it to you. Where there is a significant exogenous shock or if there was something caused by a regional natural disaster. So this speaks to urgent matters. And the DTI's opinion, Marcus indicated that there should be a definition for these things and then perhaps it could pass constitutional muster. But like I said, from the outset the committee was concerned about this and this is why this is, instead of a regulation where you normally just put a sentence, it has become a clause by itself because the committee said this must be done and this must be done. We want to make sure that everything is in order. So I actually recommend that the committee perhaps consider deleting this section. Even in respect of urgent matters like the natural disaster, the exogenous shock, it can still be done by way of legislation. Because that is almost the process that we are prescribing. The In fact, we are now, we're doing a committee bill here. If the problem is the and I'm sorry I'm saying this now, but if the problem is the process before the bill comes to Parliament, then we can do this by way of a committee bill. You know, if there is that kind of urgency. I know that Justice has done a committee bill where something was so urgent it had to be done in, I think, 3-4 days. That bill was passed in a week by both houses. It can be done. So it is not impossible. So my recommendation is that the committee considers deleting this section 88F. Alternatively, if the committee does want to retain it, that we only retain the issue of exogenous shock and the issue of the regional disasters, but then that we provide clear definitions for that. Going further, the power to declare credit agreements unlawful should be reserved for courts. I do think the tribunal should perhaps advise the committee. I do not agree with that. I do not see the tribunal has judicial powers. I do think that they can do it. Offences and penalties were also quite contentious. And people were suggesting perhaps administrative sanctions may be easier to enforce. A number of submitters were saying, you know what, we are moving away from penalties in civil law. Let us rather perhaps do this by way of administrative offences, rather than making it a criminal offence. So that is perhaps something that the committee could consider. There was also a comment about our penalties maybe being a bit out of sync. And the comment from Justice was the Legal Practice Act, a person who holds himself out as a legal practitioner while he or she is not, could get a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. We have 10 years. I'm not sure that it necessarily can compare. I think it's a different kind of situation. The one you are pretending to be me, which is fine, and the other one you are, not fine, but the other one you're actually abusing a person in a vulnerable situation. But perhaps the committee should look at the penalties that we have. We need to look at whether these things should be offences. Perhaps go through each one. A number of people have given us exactly what applies already to each type of offence. And if the committee feels that's enough, then we rather take it out. We don't make it an offence. And then we look at the penalties afterwards as well. Then transitional provisions. Now, if we don't make this a once-off measure, I don't think we need provisional transitional provisions, because the operational the specific clauses could be made operational at a later date. If we decide to go with the once-off, then we will probably have to have transitional provisions because people will not be able to comply immediately. Then proposals in respect of reckless lending, and I'm very close to done. Reckless lending, some people were saying we're not doing enough. Other people were saying the reporting that we're bringing in is going to be absolutely impossible in practice. Now, the DTI is indicating that they would still like debt counsellors to report. But even in the submissions, debt counsellors indicated that it is very difficult for them to find the information. The big problem with reckless lending is, first off, the affordability assessment regulations and an apparent, I'm not saying that it is, but this is what the submitters were saying, an inadequacy of the minimum expense norms table to reflect true affordability levels. So in other words, someone may apply for credit. The credits provide, I'm on slide 28 now, the credit provider will look at this table and leave a person with 500 rand for the month to do rent, to do food, to do everything, which is just not doable. There was a very good presentation on this. Perhaps that is something that the subcommittee can discuss again, or the committee itself even, and just look at that. But those things aren't for this bill to address. That must be fixed through the regulations. So that is something that must be fixed by the department, and they can already do that. But also another problem is that there are different calculation methods. In this regard, in fact, I would maybe at another meeting for the tribunal to talk to this committee about a case that was before them where they actually looked at the calculation method of a bank. The regulator says that the matter was reckless, and the problem for the tribunal was that the regulator could not prove that the system used by the bank was not complying. Now, that makes it almost impossible to prove whether there is reckless lending. Now, come back to the reporting side of things. If you're a debt counsellor, you must first get those documents from the credit provider. Credit provider will say, but then I need to disclose my whole system to you. I'm not going to do that. That's anti-competitive. So whether that is or is not, the problem is that there might be a practical problem for debt counsellors to actually get that information. So the problem that they've indicated is that it almost makes the debt review twice as costly and will take twice as long. So there are a lot of these problems that we need to think about. My recommendation specifically would be that this issue of reporting on reckless credit rather be removed from the bill totally, both in respect of credit providers and debt counsellors. DTI is busy with the review of this Act. I would recommend that they rather look at the impact, look at how it can be made possible, and rather bring it in that bill. There is something that we can look at. The one thing was, apparently there's different interpretations in courts of Section 83. Now, Section 83 deals with the declaration of reckless lending. And some courts interpret that you cannot bring that as a standalone application. It must be part of the debt review. We can perhaps fix that so that it can be a standalone application. And we can perhaps make referrals to the National Credit Regulator if possible. Because currently, reckless lending, this is what some debt counsellors also complained about. They refer something to the regulator, and the regulator says to them, you must go to court. The reason for that is that the Act does not allow a debt counsellor to refer reckless lending to the regulator. It is only a complaint that can come to the regulator, and that can only be brought through a consumer. So those are perhaps rather the kind of things that we can quickly address in this bill, rather than having something in here that might have severe practical implications and might even exclude people then from the debt review, more people from the debt review system. In respect of the NCR's power to suspend, big concern. When this bill started, the idea was only to focus on the debt intervention measure. We then looked at things that could quickly be done, and one of them was then to look at reckless lending. But it seems that that has maybe a greater impact than we would have envisaged before. And I would recommend that that rather goes back, that we take that power to suspend out. There's also constitutional concerns around that power to suspend. If we retain this, I would suggest that we need to make certain amendments. We need to look at the role of credit providers, and it must be made clear. There must be very clear definitions for the terms used, reasonable suspicion and so on. We need to rule out self-incrimination. You know, this actually made me so angry when I read it, but it is 100% true. It is correct. Credit providers would say, but so what if I find that my previous analysis was actually reckless lending? Now you're forcing me to report myself. And I thought to myself, the cheek. But yes, unfortunately that is true. You do have a right not to self-incriminate. So we will have to make provision for to rule out self-incrimination. There must be clear processes for the reporting, and I would say that the NCR should not be suspending the agreement, and it should then be fully subject to Section 83, which deals with suspension. And of course, I would recommend that related offence of reckless lending be deleted. It is simply too unclear when something is reckless lending. Proposals in respect of credit life insurance, last. I do apologize. I said it was a lot of information. Proposals in respect of credit life insurance. First off, I fully agree. It was never the intention for credit providers to be insurers. I definitely drafted that without thinking further than my nose. We need to correct that. It should be drafted in the similar fashion so that a person can go apply to another insurer to get this insurer. There was a concern, and I think this is something that the committee should take seriously. There's concerns that a product may not be available. In other words, insurers might say, I'm not interested in insuring this group at all. Now, you can't force an insurer to make that product available. And if there isn't a product and they must have the product, then they can't lend. So we might, in effect, exclude the people with more than 6 months, less than 50,000. We might be stopping that whole sector of credit. That is not the intention. Now, what I would propose is, of course, first we clean the wording up, but then at the end of the bill, we specifically say that certain sections of this bill can be put into operation at different times. So in other words, this specific clause will be on the statute book, but it will not be operational until the Minister of Trade, Minister of Finance has had time to talk. They've talked with insurers, and it is clear that there is a product that can be developed and that will be available, and then it is brought into operation. The other things that we need to maybe just look at, the one I don't have an answer for, and I think it is something that the committee needs to talk about. I don't know if the committee can even come to an answer. If a person is in arrears, credit life insurance is cancelled. So the whole purpose is gone. Yes, so I don't know what to do about that. Maybe someone from the insurance sector can come and advise us and tell us how to deal with that. And then we should clearly specify the risk that should be insured against through this risk, the credit life insurance. So that is just, I think, in fact, Treasury has some ideas on what. In their submission they indicated some things. We can consider that. And that is it. Thank you very much.
Well, I must say that was a grueling presentation for you to get through, but you did so very succinctly. And what we're going to do is to allow you a mini break. We're having tea break now for 5 to 10 minutes. I'm not sure what your watches are saying. Mine says 10 past, so we can get back at 4:15 on mine. What is your watches? Well, there we are. 4:15, we want to get back on track to engage by 20 past. Thank you. Can I ask members on this side?